Show about fathers and fatherhood. Fathers are famous for not expressing their deepest emotion, and their children are usually left to wonder. On today's show, we'd like to hear from fathers and their children. What's the relationship with your father really like? How has the connection with your dad helped you develop into the person you are today, whether it's a positive connection or a negative one? What have you always wanted to say to your father? What would you like to deepen your connection or bring up a difficult topic for fathers out there? How do you maintain your relationship with your child? What would you wish you could have said way back when to make things better? Open show. Our number here is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Please call early in the show. I have a feeling we're going to be flooded with calls as the show goes on. So if you're a dad and would like to tell us something about your experience, the good news and the bad news, give us a call. Or if you've got a dad or had a dad, give us a call and tell us that story. With me here in the studio is my producer, Mike and Scott. Hey, Mike. And
thank you, Dan. And Dan, you know, when we started talking about doing the show for Father's Day, for me, there was really only one way to open up the discussion to get into this topic, and that was with an essay from your book, Letters to Sam. I remember your father well. I met him a few times and thought he was a wonderful man. And when I got your book, Letters to Sam, I read an essay that you wrote to Sam, which talks about Sam's father and also talks about your own father. So I wanted us to hear that essay to get started with today's show. So let's take a listen.
Dear Sam, I began to get a pretty good sense of your father the first time I came to visit him at his house. Before my visit, he asked Debbie and me some detailed questions about my physical needs. As soon as he saw my heavy wheelchair, he began planning how he would build a ramp to his front door. The first day I came to his house, the ramp was ready, built with his own hands. Later on, when your dad learned about your autism, he said one thing I'll never forget. His eyes welled up with tears, and he said, "If Sam can't learn in school, I'll take a couple of years off work and we'll sail around the world. I'll teach him everything he needs to know in those 2 years." That says everything about your dad's character. To me, it says he'll do whatever it takes to enable you to have a full life. He's going to make that happen no matter what. My father, your pop-pop, loved me as much as your father loves you, but the way my father expressed himself was much different. His image of fathering came from his father, a man who had endured extreme adversity in Russia and was never quite comfortable in this country. To my father, a dad was someone who was strict, rigid, and demanding. My father loved me too, but he showed it from a distance by working hard and protecting his family. I want to tell you about my relationship with him and the understanding we came to before he died. My father was often away from home when I was growing up. Working in his Army-Navy store in Pleasantville, New Jersey, he earned enough money to raise his family in a middle-class suburb and send his children to college. But he worked 13-hour days, 6 days a week. My time with him was precious and rare. For a while, I resented that. Then, as I grew, I learned that he really didn't like that store very much. But what else could he do to support our household? Sam, he worked at something he didn't like for 38 years so he could care for his family. When I was young, I thought I saw rigidity in my father's temperament. As I matured, my vision changed. Now I see the rigidity was really tenacity. As a young man, I was critical of his lack of assertiveness and aggression. Now I think less about those shortcomings and more about the kindness and love he had for his family. At the age of 82, your pop-up was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. 6 months before your pop-pop died, I spent a wonderful month with him in Atlantic City, where his apartment overlooked the beach and the ocean. Since he and I knew the state of his health, I discussed with him whether he wanted emergency attention to be resuscitated if he lost consciousness. If he preferred, I said, we could just help him be comfortable in his apartment by the ocean. It was a difficult conversation for both of us, and ultimately he chose comfort over medical attention. He and I had our last visit the day before he died. It was a very windy day. When I got to the apartment, he was sitting in front of the window, warmed by the sunshine. I pulled my chair right next to him. After I rested my arm on his shoulder, we gazed down at the beach together, not saying much. A strong wind was blowing the sand directly into the ocean, erasing all the footprints. It seemed that if the wind kept up, all the sand would blow into the sea. The beach was being swept clean. As I watched the beach renew itself, I moved my hand to my father's chest, drawing him closer. Without looking up, he took my hand, kissed my left thumb, the only area in my hand where I have sensation, and gently rubbed his cheek on it. The next day, his nurse found him in the same place, sitting in his favorite chair in the living room facing the ocean. He was no longer alive. It was the right way to die, and for him, the right time. I knew that. But for several days after his death, whenever someone asked what I needed, I began to cry. I need to feel his cheek on my thumb one more time. Sam, as long as I'm alive, whenever I'm with you, I'll be glad to tell you about your pop-up. He was a small man, small in stature, small in the mark he made in the world. He didn't lead any groups or organizations. All he did was marry a woman he adored and raise two children who were capable of love and compassion. He lived and loved. He left the world pretty much the way he found it. Someday, Sam, you'll take the measure of your own father. You'll see the role he plays in his family's life, in your life, and in your mother's life. And you'll know the dimensions of his impact on the world. But I know that none of those judgments or measurements matters very much right now. What matters now is the way you look at the ocean together.
And that is a story from Dan's book, Letters to Sam. And Dan, I have to say, that's my favorite one in the book. It always has been. So thank you for sharing that with us. I know that you got much closer with your father in the later years of his life. Do you have any regrets that you weren't, that happened so late?
Oh, sure. I wish we had been closer earlier, but I think it would have been impossible. I was busy trying to be a man, whatever that meant to me in my head. I couldn't soften up. And he was, too. He was, you know, a relatively young man. When I was 18 through 30, you know, he was, you know, still out there slaying dragons for the family. I don't think it could have happened. I don't think. But, you know, my accident when I was 33 certainly softened me. I think it softened him. I wish we both could have been softer earlier, but I'm so grateful that we had what we had. And that story about my thumb, his touch on my thumb, I got a massage a few weeks ago, and she started to massage my left hand and got to my thumb, and I started to cry. So the memory is still in there. It's still in there in my body.
Are there still some things that you wish you would have talked to him about that you didn't get to talk to about?
No, I've got no regrets, and I've got no regrets with my daughters either. It's very important to me to not have regrets as I get older. No, I really don't. Everything was open with him, and towards the end, after my mother died, he was much more open, sharing his feelings, his fears, his anxieties, and his feelings about his marriage, too. So no regrets, none.
What do you think made this closeness possible? Was it simply the fact that you and he spent more time together? Did you sit down and talk? Did one of you start a conversation that was maybe unusual for the two of you to have?
I don't think it was anything magical. I tell a story in the book about a window trimmer that came to my house from Italy. He was born and raised in Italy. And his life took some turns that he didn't expect, like all of our lives. And he said to me, "I think we're born square and we die round." And he's right. So over time, we lose our edges. And I think that's what happened with my dad. I think it's what happened with me. When I was young, and they called me a young man, and they called me Danny, I would rail against that. You know, I'm Dan, you know, but by the time I hit 40 or 50, you know, I kind of liked it again. You know, it's okay to call me Danny. So, you know, we lose our edges, you know, and that happened with him and it happened with me. There was nothing magical. I feel such great sadness when I see these relationships in my office between fathers and sons, whether the next generation is there or not. But the words don't come out. The heart doesn't open. The anxiety stays up. The resentment gets held on to. And it just breaks my heart because I know these are two men that underneath everything care deeply about one another and have no idea how to express it.
Well, we want to hear your stories on today's show, so please give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. And Dan, do we already have some callers on the line?
Yes, we do. Let's start with Mark. Mark, hi, you're on the air.
Thanks, Dan. I listen to your show very frequently, and I'm always amazed at the scope of the emotional issues that you touch on, so I thought I'd just hear really briefly. My dad's 80 years old and was the proverbial New York Harlem tough guy the whole time I was growing up. But we were fairly close, and so this year at his 80th birthday party that we threw him, he kept up a good face for the whole family. He wasn't going to let his emotions down. But at some point, he ended up crying on my shoulder, you know, tears of joy. And my sons, 15 and 17, saw this, and they were amazed that their tough guy grandfather could cry at all. Well, this past weekend, we went to basically an old home reunion in Plainfield, New Jersey, where I'm from, and I was kind of overcome about it. That, and I end up crying on their shoulders, and I am sure they're walking around in shock that the two toughest guys that they think they know could both dissolve like that.
Did you ask them how they feel about it?
They were too busy hugging me and patting me on the back.
Ah, good for you. Good for you. I'll tell you something I learned, Mark, as a man about being strong, and I learned it after my accident. You know, I had the same image understanding of strength as most other men. And after my accident, years after my accident, I really learned what strength was. Strength is having the courage to look someone in the eye and say, "Please help me. I hurt right now. Please help me." That's real strength. And that's the kind of strength, you know, most of us don't have. And obviously, you and your dad both have that kind of strength, and you're wonderful role models for yourself.
Well, as you said, time helps. I'm pushing 50 now myself, so it's a lot easier today than it was when I was 25.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? I mean, getting older isn't all bad, is it?
Not at all.
Yeah,
I'm kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, it's not all good either, but it's not all bad. Mark, thanks so much for your call. We're having an open show today about fathers, fatherhood. What was your relationship with your dad like? What happened? What was missing? If you're a dad, tell us what it's like to be a father, what it's been like. What are your wishes? What are your fears? What are your regrets? Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. We're having an open show today about fathers, right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
Where some people find a statistic, others see a story.
A lot of the gunshot wound victims that I see are African American, so when they look at me, I hope they see that you can do something good with your life.
I'm Farai Chidea. Discover a world of African American viewpoints on issues that make a difference to you on News and Notes from NPR News.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're having an open show today about fathers, our relationships with our fathers, what's there, what's missing, what we long for. And if we're fathers, same thing, what's there, what's missing. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Our intern, Shane Ewing, went out and talked to some people about their dads. Let's listen to what he found out.
My parents were divorced when I was pretty young, and my dad was a single father, and it was a big part of what he was about and how he raised my sister and I. He's a great dad. He was a big part of my life, and I think he made good strides to help keep us together as a family, even though it was two homes.
My favorite moment was when my dad was in the house and I was outside, and he started to scream, "Yay, the Phillies won."
Happy Father's Day, Dad.
He's always been a stand-up guy, making sure you do the right thing kind of stuff.
My father is a big fan of music, and he's a very good dancer. He's very funny and smart, and he likes to entertain everybody. I think he's just great, and I think he and my mother, because they have been a team together for 53 years, very much in love with each other, and part of that is because he's kept her laughing all these years.
That was Shane Ewing collecting some opinions from people about their fathers. Let's go right back to the phones. We've got Matthew on the line.
Good morning, or actually good afternoon. Hello?
Matthew.
Yes, I apologize. Good afternoon. I'm calling, I have a great father, but he was always a very strong and tough and disciplined kind of dad who clearly felt that his primary goal was to play the part of a teacher as opposed to perhaps showing affection. And it wasn't until probably when I got into college and I recognized that the characteristics that I possessed that I liked the most and that helped make me successful, I gotten from him. And by that time, I think that the relationship had already, the tone of the relationship had been set, and I don't think that it was, we didn't frequently express affection to one another, but so I wrote him a letter. I wrote him a letter just to tell him that how much he meant to me and that he was responsible for making me the man I am today, and to thank him and let him know that he was my best friend. And I know that that he read it. My mom told me that he read it. He never mentioned it to me, actually, but my mom told me he read it and that he cried and that he told her that it was the most wonderful thing that he's ever received. So although we never vocalized, or I never vocalized it to him, at least I communicated it to him in writing, and I think that was a really wonderful thing, because since that time, I think that we've been much closer and actually more affectionate and more open and honest with each other about our feelings.
Isn't that interesting? Without his words, without his verbal reaction to the letter. Matthew, what was it like writing it?
It felt good. I was nervous. It felt wonderful, because the truth is, he's the best dad ever. I mean, he really is, and I love him very much. And so it was, it was kind of like, I think people normally think of the term getting something off of your chest in a negative way, but this was getting something out of me in a positive way. I wanted to communicate something positive to him, because I thought it was important for him to know. It was more for him than for me. I didn't think it was going to be such a powerful experience for me, but it turned out to be.
What was hard about it?
I think just the foreign feeling of it.
Because it was new.
Yeah.
Yeah, pushing the envelope. So how did you feel when he did not react to it? Were you hurt or disappointed?
No, not at all. I didn't hand it to him and sit there while he read it. I went over there for dinner one night, and I just left it behind as I was leaving. And so I knew that he was going to read it. I didn't want to be there when he read it, and I was not really expecting a reaction. I was expecting him to read it and comprehend what I meant, and that was all I really wanted. I just wanted him to know how I felt. I was not let down in any way, and I'll tell you, when my mom told me what she told me, I was very, very happy.
So,
and, you know, she tells me to this day, infrequently, but she always tells me, you know, he still has that letter, and every now and then, he just picks it up and reads it. And that makes me feel very good.
Well, part of the message that we need to learn from your story, Matthew, is that if we long for more closeness with our fathers, it's often our at one point, it's our responsibility to knock on the door and open it despite our anxiety and discomfort, and not wait for our dads because we might wind up waiting too long. Thanks so much for calling in and sharing your story. We have a caller called in and left the message. This was my darling daughter, Debbie, who is the mother of Sam. Now, heretofore, Debbie and I had a pretty good relationship, but she leaves the following message. She says that my only flaw is a father, that I never taught her how to change a tire, and as we speak, she is stuck on the side of Route 295 with my precious grandson, Sam, so that if any of you are on 295 and you see a Prius with a beautiful little boy in, please give that lady a hand so I don't have to feel so guilty. Thank you, Deb. Thanks for calling in. We're having an open show about fathers and fatherhood. Tell us your story about your father. What was there? What was missing? What changed in your thinking about your father over the years? And fathers, what changed in your thinking about being a father over the years? Let's go back to the phones. We've got Beth on the line. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Hi, Beth.
Hello.
Yes, hi. You're on the air.
Wow, how are you?
Okay. What can we do?
I just wanted to talk about, you know, my relationship with my father. My parents got divorced when I was, like, about nine years old. And for a long time, I blamed my father for just about anything I could think of. And I was filled with a lot of anger and resentment. About the divorce and about some other things that happened when I was a kid, and I felt like it was all his fault, and it really had this really severe impact on my relationship with him. And, you know, I had very turbulent teen years and early 20s, and I eventually got, I sobered up. I went to a 12-step program, and I've been sober now quite a long time. And since I've gotten sober, the relationship with my father has changed so dramatically. And I realized that, you know, I had a part in a lot of things, and that, you know, parents are not given a book on how to parent, and they do the best they can with what they have. And I was able to look back in sobriety and look at, you know, he never did anything to hurt me. You know, he loves me so much, and he only tried to help me with every move that he made was the best intention, though the results might not have been what I wanted. You know, and I was able to look back with a little bit more wisdom and experience and say, like, you know, in making my amends, which I do in this program, I was able to thank him and apologize for my part in things and apologize for holding resentments for things that had happened in the past and kind of let that stuff go. And since then, you know, he has even said to me, like, our relationship is so much stronger now, and we can talk to each other in such a healthier way. And it's really allowed our family, just our relationship has allowed our family to grow closer together, too, because it was always such a huge like, no one can talk to Beth, and everyone has to walk around on eggshells when it comes to Beth. And since that has changed and our relationship has strengthened, the entire family unit has strengthened. So
that's a beautiful story. Your story reminds me of many years ago, Ingmar Bergman produced an autobiographical film about his family, and it was called Best Intentions. And you know, like so many of our families, his family was a bit screwed up, but the message is, you know, nobody walks down the aisle with the intention of getting divorced or having children and hurting them. You know,
right.
we all do our lives with the best intentions, and I think it really is a credit to you, to the work you've done, to A, acknowledge that this man did hurt you. You don't want to minimize that fact. He did hurt you. He did cause you pain. And that was not his intention.
Right, exactly.
His intention was to love you best he could and perhaps save his life. His judgment might have been impaired out of desperation. We've all experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
But all he wanted to do was love you, and he did hurt you in the process. We all do that. We all do it to people we care about, inevitably. It's just mm-hmm. part of being in relationship.
Yeah.
You and your father are both very fortunate people.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for calling in.
All right. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. All right. So there's always work to be done in these relationships between fathers and children, and our vision of them changes. You know, that Mark Twain classic line, you know, when he was 18, I thought my father knew nothing. And when I got back at age 21, I was amazed at how much he had learned. You know, our vision does change. I said that in my letter. You know, what I saw in my dad is rigidity, you know, over years. I saw as tenacity. What I saw as in my dad is cold and unloving because he was never around. You know, that was his way of loving the family, was working as hard as he did at a job he didn't like. There's always lots of ways of looking at the same reality, and depending on the way we look at it, one way causes us pain, and the other way causes us gratitude. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bob up next on the line. Bob, hi, you're on Voices.
Hello?
Hi, Bob.
Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that my experience of Father's Day is a very difficult, and it's a torment to me every year. And the reason is, you know, like over the years, I used to talk to my dad every day, almost every day, I'd say. He's a real, you know, bug for calling me up on the phone at the drop of a hat. And we used to talk every day, and then in 2002, It emerged that he had this incestuous relationship with a stepdaughter who was 10, but that all happened like 30 years earlier. And so since that revelation, well, for the first 3 years, I absolutely never spoke to him, and I actually worked out plans to kill him in my head, but never acted upon that, of course. And and so now I kind of went into depression after that, and at a certain point I just called him up and said, hello, you know, I just want to acknowledge that you exist and that you're my father, and it's extremely difficult ever since just to communicate with him at all.
Bob,
just to have the simplest conversation, in fact,
Bob,
is like a torment.
Tell us, if you don't mind, you told us the facts about what he did, and
yep.
then you told us about what you did in response. Tell us what happened to you when you found this out.
It was like an atom bomb going off in my head. I mean, he had done this. He's got the same name as I do. He was about the same age as I was when I found out, when he did it. And it was like,
did it scare?
I couldn't believe it. It was just so shocking, but it was impossible to ignore. I mean, it was true. And I just went into this absolute rage. I was saying, like, if I was, you know, rich and powerful, or either rich or powerful, I would have had him killed.
What were you raging at? What caused the anger?
He committed a rape of a child, and, well, it was, you know, an incest thing.
Were you scared, Bob?
I was...
You talked about him...
Maybe I was.
You sharing a name. You're being the same age.
And, yeah, it was as though finding out that I had done something like that.
Yes, exactly.
But it was so bizarre. I can't even explain it. It was beyond belief, and I still can't believe it, hardly, but it's true.
What do you need, Bob?
The reason I'm calling is just to talk about it, because it's so difficult to explain to people.
It's difficult to explain to yourself.
What makes it worse is that he's not very bright, put it this way. He has no intellectual activity going on in his head, and I'm the opposite, you know. I've never been able to actually talk even this far with him. Nothing's been said.
You sound like a grown man.
Yes, so, I'm almost 50.
Okay, so he must be an older guy.
Yeah, he's around 75 or so.
What would you like to see happen between now and the time he dies?
Oh, I don't know. It's too much to wish for to expect him to actually talk about him.
It's just a wish.
Well, I guess I could tell him how angry I became when this was revealed, but...
What else?
Oh, I'd like to just come to grips with it myself. It's just, I don't know. I wish I knew.
Can I make a suggestion? I listen to you, and my heart goes out to you. At a certain point, it's not just about your dad, it's about you. You're suffering now. This is all new to you. And I hear it raising all sorts of questions about who is he, who was he, who am I,
yes.
What was real, what is real, what does it mean to be me, can I be safe with him, and can I be safe with me? I can only imagine all the questions that are going on. My request as a fellow human is that you care for yourself. Get help. Find an objective party that, you know, will find a safe place for you where you can talk and talk and talk until it becomes clear, until you can find some kind of peace for yourself, inside yourself. And then you can think about what you want to do with your relationship with your dad. But please care for yourself. Sounds like you need care.
Thank you very much.
Take care, and I do wish you the best.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Complicated relationship between father and son. How many of us have been betrayed by a father or even a mother, somebody we love? And the question is, how do we deal with that betrayal, knowing we can't undo it? We're having an open show today about fathers, what it means, what our relationship with our fathers are like, how we would like to have them, how we love them the way they are. Give us a call at 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Penn supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify may receive an initial examination and treatment with an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 12 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
I'm Madeline Brand.
My name is Samajay Booker.
People with interesting stories to tell.
How could a 9-year-old without a ticket get onto 2 flights?
He arrived.
But
there,
what is it that makes them do the things they do?
They said, no, you can't get off. They told me you had to sit down.
Who, what, where, when? Yes, but also why?
I just wanted to see my grandpa.
On NPR's Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. It's an open show today about fathers, those very important men in our lives. Give us a call. Tell us what they mean to you or what they've meant to you. We'll go back to the phones. We've got Sandra on the line. Sandra, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I just called in to say that my dad died young, unexpectedly, and I never got a chance to tell him how much I really, really loved him. As I got older, I was kind of rebellious. He didn't like the men I had married, so I was never sure that he knew that he was just the greatest person in the world to me. I like to think that somehow, somewhere, he knows, but be sure to tell your father how much you love them before it's too late.
I have a question. Back when you were younger and you were rebellious.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, did you know how much you loved him?
No, I guess not. No.
Yeah. So.
No, he was the kind of father who, kind of parent who, having found answers for himself, thought that those same answers, life goals, would apply for me too, and he would save me a lot of trouble by just, you know, dictating my life, kind of, and I bridled under that, and I gave him a hard time.
Any regrets about giving him a hard time?
No, I had to do that to become myself, but what I regret is that I didn't, especially as I got older, just let him know that I still loved him the way I did when I was a little girl and thought he was the best man on the planet.
Your point has been aired publicly, and I think your point has been aired well. Let me ask you one last question, and I'll let you go.
Uh-huh.
You said you regret not having told your father how much he meant to you. Is there anyone in your life who you need to say that to now, who's living?
Probably not. I think I learned my lesson.
Okay. All right. Now I'm done annoying you with my question.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your call.
I love your program. Bye.
Thank you. Me too. Let's go to Jim. Jim, hi.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Just not a problem, but just maybe a word of advice to all the other fathers out there. I've worked with parent and parenting groups over the years, and one important piece that I'd love to offer to your audience is simply this: the role that fathers play in their daughters' lives. Often we talk about fathers and sons, but it's also fathers and daughters, and particularly that age when young girls are approaching adolescence and they're growing up. I've watched dads on certain aspects of a girl's development, a young girl's development, withdraw, pull back, and let the mom take over. And just one thing I thought about in particular was how we as males need to respect the femininity of our daughters. And not to sound corny here, but that age when those girls begin to menstruate and develop, as fathers, to say to even a daughter, I'm going to the drugstore, do you need a product? I think that shows some level of respect for your daughter as a young woman, as growing up as a woman. And it takes away that awkwardness. I think males, we tend to sort of leave that aspect of our daughter's development to the mother. We withdraw. And I think by doing that, we serve as great role models in terms of showing respect and give our daughters something to look forward to in their own mate, in their own selection of someone who respects all of them, not just a part of their femininity.
I agree with you completely. A colleague of mine, Brenda Barry, a psychologist in Montgomery County, once coined the term counter-incest, that so many men, when their daughters hit puberty, they're so afraid of their daughter's sexuality, their own sexuality, that they shut down and, mm-hmm. and turn off. And I was aware of my anxiety going up when my daughters hit, 11, 12, or 13. I didn't know what to do with my eyes. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I was anxious. And then, you know, I looked in their eyes. These are my daughters, and it's natural to have that kind of anxiety. You know, we have to own it. It's okay.
And Ben, just and maybe a point of clarification, would it be fair to say that typically a young woman is going to select her mate or find a relationship that is based on the standard of one that she might have had with her father in terms of levels of respect?
Well, the research shows there's a better chance she's going to get a mate who adores her if her father adored her. That, people who are abused and neglected are more likely to wind up in families that feel like their family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Look, you know, the Beatles said love is all you need, and I think that was a bit oversimplified, but...
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Lloyd Webber said love changes everything, and I think that was more accurate. You know, this open-hearted, altruistic love for the child you have, it does change their lives easily.
The word I would add would be respect. Respecting your daughter and all of her femininity, and not just parts of it. That's what I would say it.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the advice. Thanks so much for calling in, Jeff.
Happy Father's Day to all of you.
Thanks. And we've got Jessica on the line. Jessica.
Hello?
Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Actually, I just wanted to share, my father just passed away in December, and he had lung cancer, and something about seeing him go through that battle was just, and you know, just really getting to know him on a completely different level. I just turned 20, and I think I was really going through, I know a caller just called and was talking about, you know, growing up and not really appreciating him or appreciating him, but you just weren't, your mind just wasn't there. And I'm learning so many things about him through his death that it's just, I don't know.
Do you mind saying what, Jessica?
I'm sorry?
Do you mind saying what you've learned about him, what the experience has been like?
Yeah. I guess without him now in my life, I'm learning about everything that I do. I look at and I think, you know, at the point of life that I'm in, I keep thinking about what my dad was like at this point, and like I'm 20, and you know what I'm doing and my dreams, and I think about him in that way, and then get him through seeing him through death and seeing him dying, like I just realized how alone he was and how much of him I didn't know. As his daughter, and I guess it's sort of an intuitive thing, like, you know, just through going through memories and seeing them now, I feel like the whole experience has really made me grow, but seeing them with that more mature eye and realizing what his point was or what he was really trying to teach me, and now, you know, maybe something he told me when I was 10, I can now look back on in that memory and really see a whole new perspective on my father. And he was just the most wonderful man, and I regret so many stupid things that I did, or even the frustration through. He was sick for about a year, and just not understanding the hugeness of his illness and that the hugeness of his impending death, and not understanding that he could die. And I don't know. I'm sorry. I hope I'm making sense.
You're making a great deal of sense. What you're saying is that you regret being the age you were, you know, when he was first diagnosed. This is what happens to people your age. The first reaction when they hear of a tragedy in their parents, when they're adolescent and late adolescent, is it's about them. This can't be happening. I need to go on with my own life. It's where your brain, where your psychology was at the moment. And for you to turn around that quickly and to invest in your father and to truly be with him is amazing. It's a treasure for him, and it sounds like it was a treasure for you.
It really was. It was an extremely humbling situation and experience for him. The things that I know that we saw him go through that I know that he never wanted his little princesses to see. I have a sister, and we both would spend our days during the day with him, and I really regret that I learned the lesson too late. You know, that I learned how precious that time was too late.
Yeah, yeah, it's been so fresh, and how fortunate he was to have a child like you, how fortunate you are to have a father like that. My daughters have seen their father be vulnerable and fragile now for 28 years. And, you know, in the beginning, I used to have great regrets about what my disability, I'm a quadriplegic, what my disability put them through, the ongoing fears. And I'm still sad about that. But I'm just watching the women they've developed into because of their experience with me. Both of them are deeply caring, compassionate women who are making the world a better place because their hearts are open, because they know about life and death and love and how fragile it is. And these are lessons they've learned through my vulnerability, like it or not. And these are lessons you've learned through your dad's vulnerability at a very tender age.
Well, that's very beautiful that your daughters are playing that as well.
I wish you lots of tender love, and I wish you healing. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
That was a heartbreaking and heart-mending story, that young, tender voice, that precious love for her dad. Mikan joins me back in the studio, our producer. Hey, Mikan.
Hey. So many very emotional calls today, and so many beautiful stories. I think there's a lot of beauty in the relationships that we have with our fathers. Dan, I wanted to wrap things up by thinking about maybe some general advice for people. If there are listeners out there who really want to change the relationship with their fathers, how do you begin? Do you think about maybe, what do I want out of this? What do I really need? What do I want? That seems to be one of the things you mentioned.
I would change that pronoun from I to they. I'll let you in on a secret. I'm toying with a column now that might come out in 2 weeks in the Inquirer about telling me your story. And this is an experience I had with my mother after she died. She was still on the gurney, on the hospital bed, and I was sitting there with her, holding her hand, reflecting back over her life, and it was the first time I really thought about what it was like for her growing up in the era she grew up in, with the kind of personality she had. And my regret was, I wish I could have asked her those questions. What's it like, Dad, to be you? What was it like to be a kid? What's it like to be a father? Tell me what it's like to live inside your skin. Approach your father with genuine curiosity rather than, what do I want? Because that's going to guide the question. But find out who that man is, who that person is, not who that dad is. I also want to say something else to dads and to moms. There's a concept called an ethical will that's written in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And what it says is, we should document all the wisdom we've learned in life and for our progeny, not just what we've learned, but how we've learned it. And I don't know about you, but most people I know, the great lessons they've learned and the great lessons I've learned have come from adversity, have come from loss, and have come from really stupid decisions I've made. But that's where the great learnings come. And we have an ethical obligation to document our lives as we have lived them, as we have seen them, and pass it on to our progeny. Our children, we can see it from the show. Our children are hungry to know that about us.
And that's also something that you've done in letters to Sam. You pass that on to Sam and all the other people out there.
And whenever I address an audience with this book in my hand, I say, I want everybody in the audience to write this book. Our children, and whenever I speak to children, I hear them say they want to know their parents on the inside out. They don't want to hear lectures or morals or any of that boring stuff we go over and over again. They want to know our hearts. And here are these people that have been calling the show all day. So many of them just long to hear their father's hearts that might be beyond words, might not be.
I'm sure some of the stories that you did share in letters to Sam, some of them were embarrassing to you. Was it, once you finally put it out there, were you okay with it? I'm sure a lot of people don't tell those stories because they don't want to be embarrassed, they don't want their kids to know, they feel shame.
My shame has been exposed over and over since my accident. The cure for shame is exposure. You know, I talk in the book about having accidents. I've had so many of them, you know, that they don't cause me all that great shame anymore. The clumsy things that happen to quadriplegics, when they happen and I'm open about them, they don't cause me shame anymore. And, you know, so I advise that for all fathers, for all of us. You know, we're all human, and those who love us long to know us, and vice versa. Mike and I wish we had tons more time. There's lots of listeners out there that wanted to join us that we didn't have time to listen to. I want to thank you for coming in, making the show fun. I always love working with you, Mike.
And thank you, and thanks to all the callers who did call in and share their stories today.
Please join us on Wednesday, June 13th, for a special in the spirit of family. My panel and I will discuss monitoring media, my space, and negotiating communication technologies embraced by our youth today. That's here at WHYY Studios from 6 to 8 p.m. Admissions free. Look it up on whyy.org. Well, you can reach us also at voices@whyy.org. And you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Shane Ewing is our intern. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. Voices in the Family is produced by Miss Mikan Scott. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, the host. Enjoy your week, my friends. Happy Father's Day.
Day-to-day is...